All right, guys, welcome back to the Occasional Barista. I hope you all had a lovely holiday this past and then Happy New Year as well. We're lucky enough to be joined for another episode of Coffee Support with Chris McCall. You want to say hi?
Hey, guys. Round two. Here we go. Let's do it.
So we're going to dive right in. We're going to start off with a question. So multiple pours versus single continuous on the pour over. If you do multiple pours, do you reheat the water in between pours? Bless you, yeah. Whoever sneezed.
My better half. Yeah, multiple pours versus single continuous pours. Well, I think from my experience, both personal and from what I witnessed, I mean, most, I would say like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 people are doing multiple pours, you know, different tiers, different processes. I've tried single continuous pour methods, but I think it's really, really specific. You know, you're going to really cater your coffee to that and your grind size even to make that happen. I guess best practice would be to pour with consistent water temperature, because your water temperature is going to drop both in your kettle, although not by much, throughout the entire process of your pour over. The kettle that I'm using right now, the Fellow kettle, keeps it heated as long as you keep it on the base. So if you don't have a kettle that can keep a consistent water temperature, what I would actually recommend, and it's a little wasteful, but if you're really intent on trying to see the difference that consistent water temperature brings your cup of coffee, fill up your kettle to the max, and it should be able to hold that water temperature much more consistently throughout the entire duration of your pour over. Let's say 212 degree water, which cools down a little bit when you finally pour it into your cup of coffee, is really good for this cup of coffee and you want to keep it consistent. Great. This could help you achieve that. Or if you think that a cooler temperature works, like, you really have to experiment and take notes. So I wouldn't necessarily stress about it. You know, you might do this and increase the consistency of your water temperature and find out it really doesn't make a difference on the taste. So you wouldn't want to stress about it anyways. So I'm pretty sure it's a minuscule difference.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, I mean, obviously they're talking about reheating water in between pours, but I think as long as you have certain elements, I think they're also trying to bring up the debate whether, you know, one can like continuous pour after, of course, a bloom, or are you doing intermittent pours in between after the bloom? I think at the end of the day, the fact that I said bloom and people are referring to a bloom in that process, as long as you have like a blooming process in the beginning, I think you're going to be okay and always experimenting. But I think people are getting too caught up. And I obviously, there's so many pour over recipes because it got so big, like James Hoffman, and then whoever wins the next Barista or Brewers Cup, whoever recipe they use, then people are going to follow it like, you know, the Bible and the Ten Commandments. Like, if I don't do everything perfect to that step, you know. But I think it's really one of those things, as long as you, consistent water temp is important. Minuscule differences, if anything, / ensure you have a bloom, ensure you have a better grinder. And those are the more important steps to focus on, I would say.
Yeah, no, totally. I think we touched on it last time when we were doing coffee support. But, you know, most people are so stressed about what is like the perfect way to brew rather than getting to a good base and then like executing, you know, being consistent with that. And people are like, oh my gosh, does it matter if I do this, you know, 0.5, you know, tenth of a second kind of thing? And I mean, I guess it does, like, when you're competing on world stage finals, but in your everyday cup of coffee, probably not. So,
I think, and this kind of ties into the next question that we had, was how do you know what coffee works with what brew method? So they kind of go into a little more depth. They say a lot of places will give you a description of the coffee. It's not so much how it is best brewed, but it's always said pour overs are light and medium and drip or French press are dark roast. I'm sure this is very flawed. What can you look out for to make an informed decision? Does it matter? I can ask a shop if I go in, but we are back on lockdown for indoor dining. So is this a bit more difficult? So what do I do?
It's all personal preference. You know, there are some coffees, for example, back when I was at AOSA and we were working on different cold brew recipes, we found that at the time we were using some single origin coffees as a cold brew. And while they were delicious to us, or at least an experience or exciting to us, we found that some people just didn't prefer to taste certain tasting notes in their cold brew. And the same could be said for hot coffees and things like that. So Some coffees could be better. Like myself, I would love a very fruit forward and just super sweet chocolatey cold brew. I guess ideally that's what I would gravitate towards. And so I would probably use, you know, a nice natural Ethiopia, like Sidamo, right? You get blueberry, you get chocolate, great. I probably would shy away from florals, you know, because florals don't always translate really well. In a cold brew, they can either disappear entirely or they can come out making it, you know, encourage that soapiness taste. So it really depends. You have to experiment with each cup of coffee or with each coffee on your different brew methods and see how you like it. I would say that, you know, if you have a heavy citrus coffee, you probably don't want that on espresso.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you still can't put it on espresso, pull a really good shot and enjoy it really well. So there are like some things where it would point me in the right direction or at least in a direction, and that's nice. But I would say that there's no like one size fits all for that.
Well, I think it's funny now because nowadays I've actually been brewing a ton more drip coffee on like a big, like just pot brewer because it's just so easy for me. And like, especially if I'm trying to share with family or whatever, you know, it's just like, all right, does anybody want coffee? Raise the hands. Everyone is all right. We're going to brew a big, you know, drip coffee because that's just how it works. And I think really what brew method you choose really comes down to how much work, like what effort you want to put in for what outcome, because you can still make a pretty good drip coffee if you have good beans and a good grinder, you know?
Yeah.
So I think really it kind of comes down to how much effort you want to put in, but 100% what you said in regards to like actually matching it to really draw out flavor in the, like some flavors of course pair better with others. So
I just answered this question the other day. I was actually inside a store at an Air One. And someone was looking at coffee and I was just checking out the coffee section. Someone was like, is this a good coffee? And they were pointing to, I don't remember which, I think they're actually pointing to Air One's private label bag. And they said, oh, but this says espresso. I don't have an espresso machine at home. And I was like, that doesn't matter. I'm like, what do you mean? I was like, well, just because they label it as espresso doesn't mean that's what you're forced to use it on. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, you know, obviously to us with the experience and the knowledge that that's a no-brainer, but so many people are like, wow, what's on the label is law. And that really discourages people from trying things and breaking out of those boxes. So someone who may prefer that chocolatey, darker roasted coffee, the espresso blend would be great, whether or not they were using it for espresso. And so, yeah, that's a common one that I always find where what's on the bag doesn't really matter. It's still coffee and you can still brew it and use it as you please.
I get that. And I think I brought it up in the other coffee support, but can you go in depth in your own words? Cause I think I tried to on the last time, the last episode, but when they put espresso on the like bag, what for the most part, I would say 90% of roasters trying to tell their customers when they put that on the bag, what are they saying about that blend? What are they saying about that coffee?
I mean, I would say 9 times out of 10, if not all the times, if they put espresso on the bag, that's because that's what they use for espresso or what they recommend for espresso. For example, Sightglass, they have an espresso blend and then they have a couple different filter/drip blends. And I've asked them, I was like, why, you know, I tried this on espresso and it was great. Do you serve this on espresso in your cafes? And they're like, no, we don't. We just prefer to serve the one that's, you know, labeled as espresso. Hey, fair enough. But yeah, it goes to show, you know, there's, it really comes down to roaster preference and what they are trying to communicate to you. I think Hidden House Coffee in Santa Ana, they do a good example or a good job of this. I think they actually put like press and what do they have? They have one for espresso as well.
Would they have one that's like
guide someone.
They have one that is like one for like milk and sugar would be a title. And then you're like, oh, of course, like that's who I am. I'm a milk and sugar type of person. I'm going to do that on like drip, basically.
Is what they're right. And so it does pigeonhole you, you know, to certain customer basis, perhaps like myself. I'd be like, oh, I don't want the milk and sugar, probably too plain for me. But it's like a compass. It's what you're trying to communicate to someone and guide them in a direction that's going to make them happy and be satisfied with their purchase.
Awesome. Well, This is funny. I think also we did talk about this, but does microwaving a cup of coffee drastically affect its taste and aroma? And is there any way you would recommend reheating coffee?
Yeah, we did touch on this one a little bit. And there's a dozen ways. And if you haven't already seen James Hoffman's video on this, it's incredibly detailed and very informative. most of the time the issue is that you overheat your coffee. Yeah. And that's very easy to do in a microwave because you're like, oh, I just want it hot. But like, how hot can your microwave get a cup of coffee in 10 seconds, in 15 seconds, in 20 seconds, 30 seconds, yeah, whatever the interval is you choose to reheat. And so I think, I don't know what the specific temperature is, but if you can bring it back to a warm temperature, but not hotter than the, you know, what you originally brewed it as, what the end result was, I think you're likely to preserve a lot of the flavor in your coffee. So if you ever put it in a microwave, don't put it in there for a minute and walk away. Maybe do 15 seconds, 20 seconds at a time and kind of see where the temperature is, because if you overheat it, then you're going to lose a lot of those flavors and it's going to take a long time to cool so you can drink it anyways. So
have you done it before?
I actually don't even own a microwave right now. One I got a microwave. The last time I owned a microwave had to be, or at least had access to a microwave in the place that I was living, was probably like 2.5-3 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, I just never really used it. And obviously there was a lot of that information coming out about microwaves doing all this crazy shit to you. So yeah, I was hesitant. But I really haven't found any like, you know, peer reviewed studies that truly prove the negative effects of microwaves.
I'm just talking about like a day to day thing. How do you reheat leftovers? Just throw it in the pan? What? You know what,
dude, I do throw it in the pan, but oftentimes if I'm just eating for myself, I can eat things cold. I'm easy to please.
Dang.
Sometimes you just don't have time to eat your food hot. You know, that's a luxury that we have in this modern age. So I like to take it back and suffer a little bit, you know?
Dude, I love it. I learn something new about you every time we have one of these.
Something's good, something's bad.
Yeah, dude. Oh my gosh. Honestly, respect to you, because that we could go into the whole talk. So like literally, like that means you're cooking. Yeah, you're eating everything on your plate. Yeah, I guess
everything. Yeah.
Anything. Wow. No, I mean,
I don't waste. Yeah.
Well, like all those like Trader Joe's frozen foods, man. Are you kidding me, dude? Oh my gosh, I survived off those for a while.
I don't blame you, man. It's so easy, you know, between the cost of food and cost of living and, you know, income, everything like that. All things considered, I don't blame anyone that ever eats cheap. Like when I was a manager at Blockbuster, like years and years ago. Yeah, I know, right? Ancient. Like what, 8 years ago? I was living off of McDonald's for like an entire year, you know, because I was so damn poor and it was so accessible and just, it worked for me at the time. So
yeah,
I don't necessarily encourage it. And if you, there are very clever ways to eat cleaner and lighter, and obviously that's a whole nother topic, but yeah, man, no microwave. It's tough when you come home from like a long night of drinking or you're just incredibly lazy Sunday afternoon. But you make do.
Cause I was going to say, I feel like you're such like the meal prep type that, cause I wanted to get into that a bit, like meal prepping and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, you just throw it in the microwave, but I guess so. Like, yeah, I would probably just stick with throwing it in the pan or I guess eating it cold, dude.
Yeah. Well, you definitely have to get a little bit more skilled with cooking because you can't just throw everything into a pan and reheat, you know, some things won't translate. So it does present some challenges.
Well, when's your birthday, man? I'll find you.
No, I guess I had a friend move out of state, you know, during COVID, and she had a microwave and she's like, oh, you can take it. And I'm like, well, I've never really used one in the last couple of years. So I brought it to Little Lunch, and now Little Lunch has a microwave in case we need
respect.
It. So.
Respect. Well, Jordan's probably happy. So there we go. Yeah.
Well, that's how we'll serve your breakfast burrito. We'll microwave it for you if you like that.
Yeah, because I don't know. Until that next section opens up, man, you're going to be tight quarters there.
A little bit, yeah. The microwave's in the bathroom, so probably not.
Yeah, food safe.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Well, did anyone else – okay, so this one, because we know this roaster very well, and I don't want to get political about this because that is interesting. Did anyone else receive a stale advent calendar from Onyx? So this one's kind of goes in depth, or I'm going to kind of cut it short. But basically, this person, huge fan of Onyx before this, of course. Despite the high prices, they buy this advent calendar. It's a bit pricey, as we know Onyx can be, because they produce quality stuff here. They say they basically, every single sample they've tried in the calendar is stale. Like more stale than the emergency old leftover coffee I keep in my cupboard in case I run out of beans. I mean, that's saying something to say it's that stale. So they basically said they even have like older coffee and it's not even that bad. This one's like really bad. They basically say wow, I reached out. They basically had some problems with customer service, blah, 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 because they didn't totally give them the full money back. They only give them a discount back because, and at the very end, there's any info or suggestions on what to do. And I think this is interesting because for two of us who we know Onyx pretty well, we know people who work with Onyx, we know people who work and have wholesale accounts with them, and I've never heard of anything from this. But of course, since this is a bigger name, this kind of blew up on the threads and people are like, oh yeah, I had all this stuff. So I want to just know what your opinion about this is, slash if anybody feels like they might've received a stale coffee, what could be some ways to actually tell or figure out, get to the bottom of it, basically, I'd say.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, and even I would struggle feeling 100% confident that if I ever tasted a coffee that I didn't enjoy, that I could specifically target it and say, this is stale. Mm-hmm. I'm just not that skilled of a taster. I would like to be, you know, I'd love to be a certified Q grader someday.
Yeah.
But I'm not. And so, yeah, it's a fine line. You know, it's if someone comes out and boldly states that the coffee is stale, that's a very difficult thing to prove, first of all. And second of all, it requires you to take a look at how you're preparing this coffee at home. You know, what type of water are you using? What type of equipment? Do you have a good grinder? How fresh is the coffee? There's like a million variables to go through. And so I think it's really preemptive to say that a coffee is stale. It may not be to your liking. And to say that every coffee you got from that is stale also seems incredibly unlikely. And with Onyx putting, you know, this advent calendar out, there's a lot of pressure to deliver. And so I don't think that they would be shipping anyone stale coffees.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean that there isn't room for error or mistakes like that. Mm-hmm. But it seems very unlikely. Hats off to Onyx though, for at least giving them some kind of discount and like meeting them in the middle, because, you know, I understand people would probably want their full money back, but considering the ticket item, you know, probably not going
to
happen.
Well, I think this is something that I wanted to bring up too, because this caused a lot of controversy. A lot of people post about it, and some people were coming out, oh yeah, I've gotten stale coffee too, and all this stuff, right? And it sucks because we know there's such good, obviously, you have such a big fan base, this is not going to really hurt them too much now. But everyone's saying, oh, I'm never going to order from them again. And I think it's really, this is why I think it's important that you really need to start listening to people who kind of know what the roasting process is and how wholesale and shipping works, and how for really most companies to actually send you stale coffee is a hard thing to really do. You know, it's kind of like a weird thing to like imagine. You know, especially for specialty coffee roasters or smaller coffee roasters to really be able to even do that, you know, to be even to hold on to coffee for that long to the point of it being quote unquote stale. Because you and I, we joked around too, how we were talking about Banger and coffee. You had an old bag of the Unlearned Project or what was it? I honestly think I might still have the bag or something.
The barrel aged.
The barrel aged. And we tried it 6 months or like something crazy. How old was that coffee? And yet we can say, okay, quote unquote, what we might say is stale, but at the same time, the flavors, the notes, it was just a little bit more, of course, not necessarily mundane, but of course, just drawn back a bit from, of course, if it was a fresh coffee. Like, I think this is a good point too, where it's like, experiment with your coffees, but be careful to make quick judgments based off of one cup, two cups. Don't brew it the same way as well. Change the recipe, right?
Change the recipe, change the vessel, pay attention to your water. Like, and if you don't already have things to verify the quality of those things, like get those tools. Yeah. You know, whether you have a TDS meter, you can get that online for like 20, 30 bucks tops. There's a lot of different things to consider, but I actually wanted to touch on that. You know, I think it actually is very easy for newer roasters to get stale coffee. You know, depending on where you're buying your green beans from, let's say, and I don't know any green distributors that actually do this because the only ones I know are reputable, thankfully. Right. But let's say I'm a green buyer and I'm importing all this green coffee and I have coffee that's just, you know, it's been sitting around, nobody's wanting to buy it. You're a new coffee roaster. You're like, hey, we want to buy coffee from you. And be like, great, let's start with this one. I've got this coffee. I'll give you a super sweet deal on this. You know, put them in a position they can't turn down. And then now they have coffee that's been sitting in a warehouse in bags for 6 months to a year already. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then maybe you can get some coffee that is starting to go stale, some what we call baggy coffee, you know, that starts to have that almost like cardboard background, you know, taste to it.
Yeah.
And start to taste the burlap bag through the green.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine a newer coffee roaster, someone with less experience, less familiarity, maybe a newer relationship with an importer possibly having that issue.
Yeah.
But Onyx sources the vast majority, if not all, of their coffee themselves.
Yes.
So they're not going to have baggy coffee syndrome. They're not going to have stuff that's old, especially again with something that has such a spotlight on it. So
yeah,
it seems unlikely. Seems unlikely that that was truly the case, and
mm-hmm.
he or she was given the benefit of the doubt. So still very lucky.
Yeah. Again, and then I'm of course a little biased because I like Onyx here, but I think this is also just a cry out for people to be like, don't listen to everything you read on the internet, especially from people who are sometimes like couch experts here who are like, oh my gosh, I have the pinnacle of taste sometimes, you know?
And I think that plays there's a nod to that of like cancel culture, you know, as soon as one person is like, hey, I have a bad experience. Everyone wants to ride that train just for the sake of riding the train. And yeah, it's unfortunate that people would slander Onyx over coffee quality, because that's the one thing I know about them to be true. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go into something that we were talking about before, but what do you do with gifted coffee that's not to your usual taste? And I kind of like led into this because this person had a bunch of coffee that we might and wish that they gifted to us instead of probably throwing it away and called it stale. But it's one of those things where we just had a quick conversation. I was gifted a coffee from some Canadian friends of mine, and it was a dark roasted, it was a blend, but dark roasted French roast, you know, with mixed in with a medium roasted Honduras or something. And it's maybe not to my taste preferences, but what is some things that I could do about it? And what would you do?
I mean, you can re-gift coffee. I mean, ultimately, if we want to look at it from a fundamental standpoint, someone gave you something. It is now yours to do as you see fit.
Yeah.
And if you're able to get value out of it by giving it to someone else who may get value out of that, then I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, yes, of course, personally, there's an ego thing that gets in the way of like, oh, I wish you just were able to enjoy it as I thought you would have. But you got to let go of that. Like, you gave it up. It was a gift. You know, kind of move on and perhaps learn that a weird blend like that is not something that many people will be able to enjoy. I would look to gift, or I would utilize it. You know, I hate wasting coffee. So rather than throwing it in the trash, I'm going to play around with it. I got some double French roasted coffee from a small coffee roaster in Santa Barbara as a gift. I'm like, oh, cool, small coffee roaster. Oh, it's double French roast. And as soon as I open this bag, I mean, I can just smell the gasoline coming out. And I'm like, holy crap. And I decided to try and make some cold brew with it. I did a really, really light ratio cold brew to see if there's any possible way I can make this coffee drinkable to me.
Yeah.
I struggled. I definitely struggled. I actually drank some coffee with lots of milk and a little bit of sugar there.
Mm-hmm.
But I did it. And so it was kind of fun, like, going through those motions and seeing if I could still salvage that rather than simply just throw it away. And I don't know anybody that I could have gifted that one to. So that's why I was like, you know what, I'll just go for this, try and get some use out of it.
And I think it was important for me just because I'm not going to gift away this coffee, A, because I already opened it, but B, because I'm actually curious about something. Because just because it might say dark roast doesn't mean you won't enjoy it. It's kind of like the things you're saying, like, it doesn't mean you can't find some enjoyment out of it. And especially something as interesting as this. I've never been gifted a coffee with a, that's called a blend, that legitimately blended two significantly different roasts before. And you can see the difference and you can see the coloration differences. And now, like, after like sitting on it for a while, what my goal is and my plan is I'm actually going to separate the beans between the dark and the light and brew two different cups with both of them just to see what the roasters were thinking and the people, what flavors they were trying to do. I might do a cupping of it, but you know, there's some enjoyment.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
You know,
no, I would get say from it. Whether it's the enjoyment or just that science experiment that you're concocting, you know, if you can take away something out of it, and like you said, the coffee itself isn't of much value because it's probably not to your taste standards at all.
Yeah.
But you're still finding a way to get value out of that. And I think that's huge. You know, too much in the industry and just in general, we waste stuff very unnecessarily. And so, yeah, you can get some money's worth out of it and even still consider gifting that to someone, regardless of it being open, because that truly sounds like a little bit of a gem, you know, having that kind of blend.
Yeah, only in Canada. Yeah. I'm just gonna...
Canadians, eh? Yeah.
Yeah, and I know it's so funny because we just got a couple Canadian listeners, so we're not dissing. You guys have fantastic roasters. But this one, by far, you guys are changing the game. This might have been the gem that we've all been waiting for, so I'm going to do some more research on it.
You know, I think we probably shouldn't knock it too hard. I mean, there could be some validity to that. I think you won't get consistent cups out of that. Like maybe you have a better ratio one cup and you're like, oh, this is really good.
Yeah.
And then maybe the next one you're just like, I did the exact same thing, but it didn't work. And that's what happens when you have really funky blends like that, you know, mixing roast levels. But yeah, I mean, they could still be onto something. Maybe it works. Who knows?
Yeah,
maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised.
Well, I think you brought up a perfect point too that people need to realize, since it's not a fluid already, you know, you can't control the ratios unless you literally do what I'm about to do, which is split up the beans apart, you know, to create that happy recipe. But a lot of people like to compare it to wines, you know, get a red blend, you know. Well, it's because they're able to control. It's a fluid, so they can really control a lot of the finished product before sending it to you. We have the pre-product, which is the beans itself. So it's not one of those things that you can necessarily, and that's why blends are a bit cheaper than, let's say, single origins. And that's why you're going to be paying more, you know, to some degree. And I think people need to realize, because a lot of people get up in arms, like, why am I going to pay how many bucks more for this single origin than this blend, you know?
Yeah.
It's both from South America. It's both two Guatemalans, but it's because the fine tuning.
Ratios. Ratios is where it's at. And I think that's also a huge thing just to talk about in general, kind of like, you know, we should even do a segment on, both of us have experienced different tricks that roasters use in order to sell their coffee and sell their brand. And, you know, manipulating blends like that is a huge one. They can sell a blend for $12, $13, $14 when in actuality, you know, it only cost them like $5 a pound, you know, before it being roasted. And you know, I mean, different strokes depending on the company. You know, some people need more of a profit margin, but it's very common for people to price gouge with blends because you're just front loading them with cheap Brazilian or cheap Mexican coffees, or, you know, even in another smaller region that just didn't produce a good lot. So
yeah, but yeah, before people start getting like against coffee roasters from doing that, the profit margins you just said still was like $5 to create that blend. And then after we talked with Noah about how cheap it is to like can beers, you know, and make beers, I'm like, dude, our profit margins are still just so expensive comparatively, dude. They're so low.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that, at least for beer, I think it stems from you will probably have higher profit margins simply because you have all this equipment you need to pay off. Like, you're really trying to factor in that, like, hey, I got to pay this off in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. I don't see that happening as much in coffee, especially with the smaller specialty / third wave shops who, you know, have a lower overhead and aren't building like a $300,000 cafe build out. And even if they are, those are coming from corporations that have like generally large amount of structure and, you know, have these price margins really locked in. So, like I said, I obviously have preferences about profit margins and keeping them in a very healthy range. And it's hard to determine that unless you truly know the ins and outs of someone's business. But more often than not, I find a lot of companies price gouging on blends. So,
And we're going to quickly finish it off with, this is actually a question for you. And I think it's a hilarious question. So what's the biggest coffee mistake you've ever made? And I know we can have a whole different segment about this topic, but because like I've made a ton of mistakes when I was working, of course, as a barista. But
yeah,
in regards to specifically coffee and you in the process of making coffee, what's the biggest mistake in your mind that you've ever made?
Biggest mistake in my mind that I've ever made. I'm in the process of writing an article about the top, I think it's like 7 mistakes that I made in my coffee career, kind of as a barista or just as a professional in the industry. And I think the number one that I got from that, and again, this is in the perspective of a barista / professional in the industry, was not having enough empathy for owners or management. But more specifically, I guess directly with coffee, biggest mistake. when I was at Pete's Coffee, one habit that they used to do, and this is at the beginning of my career, so yeah. 8 years ago, at Pete's Coffee, we would take our ice beverages, fill it all the way up, right, and you have about an inch left of room. You would go and take the same milk that was used in that beverage, steam it, get it nice and frothy, and we're talking about, like, disgusting dry cappuccino foam. Sorry, personal preference. And top the beverage with that foam, because yeah. that foam was just a pleasant texture. And this is before people really, really knew what steaming hot milk and then putting it on, you know, over ice or in a cold beverage could do to people. And so I think they had stopped that maybe a year or two after I had left. But that was the practice, was putting hot foam on top of drinks simply for an aesthetic and presentation appearance. So yeah. that was the biggest mistake I ever did. Didn't know it until sometime later, but I don't feel good about it.
That's actually pretty funny, dude. Well, it's like one of those things where you look back on it, you're like, wow, yeah, probably should have known. But at the same time, dude, you're just like, so, especially in the beginning days.
Oh, yeah. Green.
Well, I think one of my biggest mistakes is that I made was tearing out, okay? Forgetting to tear out, because that's going to throw off everything. And it was for pour over, and I'll never forget, it's right after you trained me, right? So I'm like, oh, okay, like I better do this right, because like my job's on the line here. And then we had that customer, forgot his name, but he comes in, he used to come in way more, and he'd always order a pour over. And I was like, dude, this guy's serious about coffee. And I was the only person on back at the time, because we didn't have the two people closing, it was just one person. I was by myself, and I remember I went to the back, tried looking up like how to do a pour over because I forgot certain steps. And dude, I literally forgot to tear out in the midst of me like just panicking, you know? And I tried putting off his order for as long as possible, making other stuff. And I was like, oh God. And I literally forgot to tear out. And I'm sure that was like such a weird tasting coffee. Like, you know, it was probably way. And I'll be honest with you, dude, I forgot about like the time and weight as well. So I was just kind of like, I was kind of just watching it, because I forgot when you're supposed to do intermittent pours or whatever we decided upon. So I was just like pouring blind, and I was just like, yeah, that seems good.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you gave it to them with confidence, chances are they probably had a better experience with it than you anticipated. I definitely made pour overs where I was like, I don't really like how this finished, but like I don't really have much of a choice other than to give it to the guests right now. Yeah. And people would like, you know, look me in the eyes and be like, oh, this is really good. Like, thank you so much. Oh, this, I love this coffee. What is this? Let me buy a bag. And I was like, ooh, you know, I made a mistake there, but I'm glad you like it. So,
yeah.
I think that's pretty common. I mean, tearing out is one that people mistake all the time. Even I do. You know, you just get into a groove and then you forget a single step and it's like a snowball effect.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, luckily that's all behind us, and you know, and I'm glad that so happy that you could join me again for another coffee support. Please, 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 people, if you have any questions, feel free to DM Occasional Barista on Instagram. Or even if you have personal questions for Chris McColl, hit him up at the Coffee Warlock.
You
guys are even closer now. Every time I feel like I go visit Little Lunch Coffee, I mean, every little step of the way, you're getting closer and closer to opening date, which is...
Well, actually, I just got good news today. So they're finishing construction. Permitting should get signed off next week if the city doesn't lag on us. And then we're basically from next week, we could be anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks out. Just depends on how fast the health department moves, but I'm ready. And so we'll be soft opening soon, sooner than anticipated.
Dang. Well, if you guys are curious or you're inside the LA area or visiting, I mean, there's not much visiting nowadays, but look him up, Little Lunch Coffee on Instagram. Definitely, he's going to be posting a lot more. He has things moving with his partner with Odd Glory, but that might be a little more hush-hush at the moment now. But please, please, please go give him a follow, give him some love, and stay tuned for the next episode. Have a great day.